Welcome to the Geneva Peace Week podcast series, a project of the Geneva Peacebuilding Platform. Geneva Peace Week was founded on the core belief that each person, actor, and institution has a role to play in building peace and resolving conflict. Geneva Peace Week is an annual forum in the peacebuilding calendar that includes ceremonies, high-level panels, policy briefings, workshops, videos, podcasts, and other special events. These free contributions are hosted by different organizations and actors around the world. This year, Geneva Peace Week celebrates its 10th anniversary and is held from the 30th of October to the 3rd of November, 2023. For more content, join us at the Geneva Peace Week or online at www.genevapeaceweek.ch.
Hello, you are listening to the first episode of Investing in Women and Peace, the stories of women's essential roles shaping peace processes worldwide. A podcast produced by Inclusive Peace and the United Nations Women's Peace and Humanitarian Fund, WPHF, for the Geneva Peace Week 2023 digital series. I'm Philipp Popperreuter from Inclusive Peace and excited to have Dr. Tanja Paffenholz with me today. Tanja is the founder and executive director of Inclusive Peace and has over 30 years of practical and academic experience in peacebuilding. We will use the next 15 minutes to look into the changing nature of formal peace processes and the implications for women's participation therein. Hi, Tanja. Really great to have you with us today. And please allow me to immediately jump into the conversation by asking you about the most important trends in peace processes that you have observed more recently.
What we can see actually in the last almost 10 years already, it's not that recent, is that peace processes are not anymore like they have been sort of conceptualized in the early 90s when we have had the first agenda for peace, where the UN had a big role and we were looking to find comprehensive solutions to complex problems and a big peace agreement. And this was basically the type of peace processes where also women participation was modeled against. So how can we get more women into these processes, which were the so-called peace table, where you had women at the peace table, though that became a big word. And we have seen less and less such formal peace processes. And that means also less and less formal peace tables. But rather, we have seen stalled peace processes. Think about the Middle East, where most of the processes have been stalled for many, many years, and we hardly have seen any negotiations going. We have at the same time also new forms of negotiations, like national dialogue processes that are more broad-based and participatory. Not all of them are, let's say, constructive, because some are also misused from authoritarian regimes to basically put their own agenda through. But we see these different processes. We have seen also locally led processes and less and less internationally led processes. And what we also see is more and more regional countries and regional organizations being involved in ending the violence. When we think about the current process in Sudan, it's not the UN that's in the forefront or Western countries, but it is IGAD, the African Union, it is neighboring countries. And that is basically a new trend that we really can see. It is more embedded in the regions, in the context where these peace processes come from. On the other hand, I would say what is still something that is consistent is that we talk about power and influence of big power players. Of course, with the Security Council also malfunctioning, with more and more tensions between superpowers like Russia and the US, and also new powers coming into play like China, the BRICS, and so forth, we see really also a new geopolitical field there. And that doesn't make it easier to push peace processes forward. So I think these are some of the trends. At the same time, we see also that other topics are very pertinent, and that is like climate change is one of the biggest challenges of our time. And the combination of conflict and climate change is also something that needs to be tackled. And also the Secretary General of the UN constantly highlights this. But we see still limited progress, so to say, on both fronts. Yeah, I think that would be some of the key trends.
Thank you so much, Tanya, for these rich elaborations on the various trends you see in the peace process landscape these days. So a natural follow-up question from my side. What do you think these trends imply for women's participation in peace processes? And I'm also wondering, from your point of view, what are enabling and constraining factors for women's participation?
I think the main thing at first that implies for women to, let me say the sentence again. The main overarching point is that if there is no classical peace table anymore, what does it mean for women's participation? It means there needs to be much more creativity and alternative thinking. But what we have seen, and I think that's one of the first constraining factors, is that the women, peace and security community still write large lobbies for women inclusion, which is absolutely correct and right. But the challenge is that where into? So where are those processes that the women should be included into? So in the absence of these processes or in the stuckness of the processes, it is often very hard to hear the voices because the voices are still chanting the same song, i.e. please include us. And you say, but where to? Where into? While at the same time, the role of movements, women movement, civil society movement and others gains momentum. So we really have to think and have to be more creative about what are the strategies and the approaches to women inclusion. That means at the same time, also another challenge I see here is the focus on representation. If there is a process, be it a national dialogue, be it a local peace process, whatever, be it a regional gathering, is it only about the representation of women, or is it really about how women can influence inclusive outcomes? What are inclusive outcomes? Inclusive outcomes is the thinking ahead of what we want to create. We want to create an inclusive society with gender justice, but also a diverse society with intersectionality and people being part of their societies. And this means that it's not done with just having more women in a process, but what we rather also need is to think about how inclusion and gender can be mainstreamed throughout the process. How innovative formulations of, for example, quotas can be formulated so that a quota does not become just something for a particular process to get more justice with women inclusion and other sort of inclusion, but to think ahead and see how these quotas can be formulated into what we call at Inclusive Peace the inclusion formula. I give you an example that in the process in Nepal, in two consecutive constitution national dialogues after the war, they developed an inclusion formula that was quite representative of the country's population, women, young people, minority groups, different geographical entities, and so forth. And the interesting thing with that inclusion formula was it did not only serve the process to make it more inclusive, but it created a formula that was applied after the consultations, after the process, and made it into affirmative action for government positions, for university. But it made it also into normal life that today in Nepal, it is normal that people from different groups and people also from minority groups are included in every walk of life. And this is something we need to aim for. And here it means when a process starts, it's not just about today, it is about to create the future of tomorrow. And I think here we have seen not enough creativity. On the other hand, speaking positively, what we have seen emerging more and more is women's coalitions and women's movement. I'm thinking about the Horn of Africa. I'm thinking about the Middle East, of course, in Colombia. Also, the women movement was very active. So we see women movements and coalition demanding justice, demanding inclusion, and demanding inclusion also in a broader sense that is not like just in a process, but looking into the constitution that is formulated. So today, I would say modern peacemaking and women inclusion therein really means that it is preparing for the future, for a gender-just future, and not only for a particular process. So this is on the one hand really a gain, an advantage, but we are still far from sort of living this and pushing this forward. A last point I would like to mention is that we talk about enabling and constraining factors, is that there is a lot of competition also going on. There is competition between women's organizations and networks in a country, for example, but there is also competition among external supporters. And I think here we need to really use the possibilities that are there to be a coalition, a global coalition for supporting women, and not separating sort of the talk that is going on at UN headquarters, for example, and the talk that's going on in the field, but really forgetting the competition and thinking about what we all can do to support women in those different circumstances. The other thing that is often forgotten is protection. Protection of women, it comes originally more from the humanitarian field or from a human rights idea, but what we see more and more, women need to be protected that take place in political processes, because today there is social media hate campaigns, there's physical violence, there's so much going on that hinders women from successfully participating if they have access. So I think this is really important that the protection agenda is merged with the woman empowerment agenda.
You've been listening to the Geneva Peace Week podcast series. For more content like this, join us at the Geneva Peace Week or online at www.genevapeaceweek.ch.